Hi, my name is Sonia Walker. I'm 47 years old. Today is July 26, 2008. We're in Buffalo, New York, and I'm going to be talking with my mother. I'm her youngest daughter.
Good afternoon. My name is Georgie Walker. My age is 84, and today's date is July the 26, 2008, and we're in Buffalo, New York, and I'm going to speak with my daughter, Sonia.
Well, Mommy, you know that I've been really interested in family history a lot. And so one of the things I wanted you to tell me about was when you and Grandma first came to Buffalo. Like, when did this happen and who you stayed with and what was it like growing up?
I came to Buffalo with my mother, and I was 4 months old. And I stayed with my Aunt Sylvia and a group of other people who had come in from Calhoun Falls, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And did you have any brothers or sisters?
No, I was an only child.
Mm-hmm. So what was it like growing up with your cousins then?
Oh, I had a great time. I always liked to be over to their house because my aunt had 7 children.
Mm-hmm.
And we had fun. Everything was fun over there. It was marvelous being around them.
Mm-hmm. So did you get to spend the weekends with them, or how did you? What
Occasionally
was it like?
I would spend the night with them, mm-hmm. or spend a few days with them. And we all got along great together.
Mm-hmm. What kind of games did you play when you were growing up?
Well, I guess we played hopscotch and jacks, and we played hide and go seek. We played jump rope,
mm-hmm.
and we just had a good time.
All right. Now, did you all go to the same church at that time?
Yes, we did.
And what church were you going to then when you were?
We went to a Baptist church.
Mm-hmm.
It was called St. John's Baptist Church,
mm-hmm.
and it was in Buffalo.
Okay.
And
how about school? What school were you going to?
Well, eventually when I started school, I was going to school 75, and it was on Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't far. We could walk to school.
Mm-hmm. Now, all of your schools, you were always in a neighborhood school? You always walked to your schools?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then when did you, what high school did you go to?
I went to Hutchinson Central High School.
Mm-hmm.
It was downtown on Chippewa,
mm-hmm.
and Elmwood. And we walked to school there, but sometimes we would take the bus if it was real snowy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when you were taking when you were at school, did you graduate from high school?
No, I didn't graduate from high school.
Mm-hmm.
When I got out of high school, I got a summer job. It was like babysitting and doing a little light housework,
mm-hmm.
and I loved the position and. They loved me, and I was just like one of the family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, days when I could come home, I would stay and go with them where they were going.
Mm-hmm.
They were wonderful people.
Now, tell me about the family that you were working for.
I was the man that I worked for. He was what did I tell you?
Greek, was he?
He was Greek,
mm-hmm.
and his wife was Polish. And they had 2 restaurants down on Main Street. And it was great. Every day about 3 o'clock, he'd come home with a lot of donuts and things for us to sit down and eat. And we played a lot of cards.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a marvelous experience.
Mm-hmm. And they knew you were African-American. I mean you're light-skinned. And so I think sometimes people aren't able to tell that, you know, we're African-American. But they did know you were African-American.
Oh, yes.
And had...
They knew I was an African-American, and they had 3 children. They had 2 girls and 1 boy,
mm-hmm.
and I used to curl. One of the little girls had curly-type hair,
mm-hmm.
like mine,
mm-hmm.
and I used to take a glass of water, stick it in, and make her some Shirley Temple curls.
Mm-hmm.
She looked beautiful. The other one had straight hair, but they were great people. I mean, they had a Greek Easter, and my relatives came out to see me because I didn't go home.
Mm-hmm.
And they set up the place just like they were company. We had a wonderful Greek meal. They were just great people.
sometimes I think when you've talked about growing up, it seemed like the neighborhoods you lived in were less segregated than we see now in Buffalo. You know, Buffalo is one of the, you know, most segregated cities in the country, but it seemed like your neighborhoods weren't really set up that way.
Well, on my street, there were mostly African Americans, mm-hmm. but in our schools, it was neighborhood schools, so everybody, all kinds of people, Jewish, Chinese, Italian, Spanish, mm-hmm. everybody came to the school.
So you had a pretty integrated experience, even
yes.
though it was the 30s, for example.
Yes.
Which is probably very different than if you had grown up in South Carolina. Now, when did you meet Daddy? That's one of the...
I met your father, I was about 12 years old. And one of my cousins, my mother had a few of the relatives that lived with us. And one of my cousins went to school with him. And he came to visit this cousin.
Mm-hmm.
He's 6 years older than I was.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I was just a child as far as he was concerned, you know. But that's when I first met him.
And when did you start courting, as you would say?
Well, I think I must have been about 17.
Mm-hmm.
And we started kind of talking to one another and kind of going out a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And I know one time we went to Woodland Beach. My mother was, I went in the water. They didn't. My mother was sitting there, and he was sitting there. But we had a nice relationship.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were basically a war bride, sort of, because Daddy went into World War II in 1942, and then you married in 43.
Yes.
And actually, I guess that would be your second trip down south then, because you had gone down south when you were 12 for the first time.
Yes.
So when you and Daddy married, tell me about where you lived, and what was that experience like going from an integrated north to a segregated south?
Well, I went down South Carolina. He was stationed in South Carolina, Fort Benning,
Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Fort Benning, Georgia. And when we got there, it was on our honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got there, we had to find some housing for me because he didn't expect to be bringing me home, bringing mm-hmm. me down there. So we finally we got quarters on the camp,
mm-hmm.
and but we stayed one night with a lady until it was arranged that I could go to the camp, and it was pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it, but it was segregated down there.
Mm-hmm. Now, so you came back up after that, after your honeymoon, back to Buffalo?
Yes, I did.
Okay, mm-hmm. and how long did you stay up in Buffalo before you went back down there?
Oh, I can't just exactly remember, but I did go down in a few months. I went back down there.
Mm-hmm. Now, when did you first meet Grandma Walker? Was that on the first trip?
It was on the first trip.
Okay.
I met my mother-in-law, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So what was she like? Or I should say, well, was she already crazy?
No, she wasn't crazy.
Well, she was old. Did she have dementia at that
she
point?
Had, yes, she okay. had dementia.
Uh-huh.
And because, see, she was, my husband was a late, her, all of her children were just about grown when she had Samuel.
Right. She was 47 when she had Daddy.
Yes.
And so she was already in her late 60s when you married, probably.
I guess so.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And, but she was nice, and she was a little small lady,
mm-hmm.
and very talkative, and she liked me.
Okay. Well, that was good. So then when you came back to Buffalo, you and Daddy and Grandma, my grandma, who your mother, who I, the only grandma I ever had, you bought a house in Buffalo. In 1946. By then, my sister and brother, Sandra and Man, were born. And you moved into one house. So what was that like, having, you know, everybody in one house? And what was that experience like for you all?
Well, it was pretty tight because we kind of shared one bedroom with my husband and the two children.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Grandma was in another bedroom?
She was in another bedroom, and uh-huh. She had another bedroom that was occupied. She had a roomer.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to get the people that lived downstairs and rented from us to move, because I was very eager to get into my own place.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that you were all upstairs at one time.
Yes.
That's amazing. Oh, mm-hmm. Man. That would have been crowded. Mm-hmm. So I know that in your life you've had some serious bouts of illness. And
yes.
One of them was in the 50s, and you had tuberculosis. And what was that experience like? Because Sandy and Mam were little. Can you tell me something about that?
When I had to go to Perrysburg, it was a sanatorium mm-hmm. in Perrysburg, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to get a babysitter to move into my house to take care of the two children. They were going to school.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother helped out. She did the laundry for her grandchildren, and she took care of, like, watering the plants and things, because your daddy worked on the railroad and he wasn't home all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we made out.
Yeah. You were
and
about.
I had a very nice lady and her husband who took care of the children and sent them to a Lutheran church for Sunday school.
Which I always joke about how we got to be Lutheran, because, you know, most normal black people are either Baptist or Methodist, and all of a sudden we were Lutheran.
Well, we were Lutheran, and also when I was in Perrysburg, if you were Catholic, they had a Catholic priest, but if you were Protestant, your services were conducted by a Lutheran. Mm-hmm. So I was very, I really got very close to Lutheranism.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't any problem for me to, when I came home, to join my children and join eventually the Lutheran Church.
Right. And then, of course, I always say I'm the accident. I'm the late child, because Man was 15 and Sandy turned 17, and then the month after I was born. And, of course, what I remember was, you know, your second major illness when you had the gallbladder surgery, and that was really hard, because it was like from the time I was about 10 to 12,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't think you were going to live, and of course, you know, Grandma never told me anything, and Daddy never told me anything, and everybody was keeping secrets, and that was really hard. I mean, I think that's probably why I got interested in the hospital, because I figured if I could convince them I was old enough and mature enough, they would let me go in and see you. And mm-hmm. I know that was tough.
Well, it was tough, because your grandmother had you meet her at the hospital every single day.
Mm-hmm.
She got off from work. She showed you how to get on the bus and come to the hospital and wait for her. And it was a very trying situation. I had three exploratory surgeries. I had two.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I thought I wasn't going to make it either.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't understand how your teacher taught anything to you, because oh, I would get such wonderful get well notes and pictures from your class. And then just brighten up my days.
Mm-hmm.
And you weren't an accident. I'm telling you, I think now you're a miracle child. You have no idea how much I often think of that. Now with Grandma gone and you living upstairs and watching out for me and taking care of me, if I'm not there in this dark cell phone, Mother, where are you? I'm getting ready to get in the car right now. I'll be home in a little while. But I said, we do things, I guess God plans our lives for us.
Mm-hmm.
It was very difficult when your father passed in 2001. And to think that my mother lived until 2006, and she was 101.
I know. Wouldn't it be great if she could have been here for this? She could tell you some stories.
She could tell you some stories, yes. So I always felt I was very lucky. Mm-hmm. I really was. Things were pretty quiet around our neighborhood. And I finally became interested in, when I was 18, my mother took me to vote.
Well, before that, though, I mean, one of the things that, with me doing the family history research and I got Grandma's pictures, I found that editorial that you had written in 1943, and the editorial was clearly saying that the Negro should be able to work in the war effort, and it's important to open up these jobs. And I was like, wow, this is where I get my radical side from. My mother, the radical in 43, like this. And when Daddy was, down there, what were you doing during the war? What was Grandma doing during the war?
Well, eventually, your grandmother did get a job in the war plant.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, you could only get a job sweeping. So she had a part-time job. She would sweep, and when the wing of the plane came by, she would put it was very cold water. You had to take the decal out and put the decal onto the wing of the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And so I eventually got a job in one of the war plants, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the money was great, and that's what I'm saying. All these people were getting all this money, and the African-American people weren't getting a chance to go to those jobs.
Right.
But they finally did start hiring them. So,
I think that you always set really incredible examples for all of us with the expectation that we would, be faithful to, our beliefs, and be interactive with our community, and make sure we got good educations. I mean, I think Daddy would have killed us if we didn't get college degrees, because you and him didn't have that opportunity. I want you to share some of the things you did about our neighborhood. I mean, we've been in that same house now, you for 61 years, and being the first African-American in the block, and the changes we saw on the fires in 68. And my personal opinion is that one of the reasons why that happened was that the neighborhood was going downhill so fast, and the city was not responding and getting the old houses torn down. And the only way to make that happen was to get them burned down. And but then after that, tell us about the work you were doing.
Well, I was invited to a meeting. It was called the Buffalo Community Development Corporation, and they were talking about doing work to improve our neighborhood and getting people to help us get these terrible houses down. And eventually, there were so many houses on the street, we didn't have driveways at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to join this group of people, and it was marvelous. They had good ideas, and they finally got people to listen to us, and they finally had architects to work with us and help us get our neighborhood together.
And it's great, because it's like almost all owner-occupied. We're in the heart of the east side of Buffalo, and people look out for each other on the street, and it's made a huge difference.
We have
a few more houses, we have to get them down, and then we'll be in great
right,
shape.
Right, because we have a great big lot down there that a few more houses can be. But the best part is having garages.
Mm-hmm.
We were fortunate, because when the lady next door had to move out, and we were able to go down to an in-rem sale and buy that piece of property and have enough land there to put two cars off the street.
Right.
And to have a big yard where my mother planted lots of flowers and my husband did a lot of gardening.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very just relaxing to be out there.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think one of the things I was proud of was that we never left the city. We could have moved to any suburb like other people could have, because, Daddy worked hard and saved money, and but it was like a commitment to making sure that our neighborhood survived and grew and flourished. And I was proud of the fact that you did that. And I think that tied into my commitment, you know, of going to Africa and the Peace Corps, and then also coming back and, you know, deciding finally become a teacher and stuff.
And teaching in the inner city.
Well, yeah, I had to give back. I mean, mm-hmm. These are my kids. They're my future.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel about it. Now, when you think about, you know, having raised us, if you look at, you know, what you did with us, is there anything that you would have done differently in raising us, Sandy Mann or me?
There's no difference. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, your father always said that I had to stay home because he was on the railroad, and if anything happened and I was on a job somewhere, who was there to take care of the children?
Mm-hmm.
And so he always insisted that I stay home. I think I did get a job when Sandra was 13.
Mm-hmm. For a hot second.
Yes. You want some independence. And then the money, you know, it was kind of difficult for one paycheck to take care of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So I did get a job, and I enjoyed the job. I guess I was a little independent.
Mm-hmm.
And working with the BCDO and with the Triad Board, we really went to town once we got that first house up.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember my mother asking Mayor Griffin. He says, "Mayor, I heard you have money to renovate the bus garage over there across from my house."
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Yeah." He said, "Well, I want to know when you're going to get started." And so he told an aide next to him, he said, "I want you to take your name and address and telephone number. I'll get back to you." And a few days later, he called me. His architect told me exactly what they planned, because there was a Metro bus garage across the street. Mm-hmm. When we moved in, it was a streetcar.
Mm-hmm.
The streetcar would come in the middle of the street at about 5:30, turn into the garage, and in the morning they would go out, Maine and Michigan, not waking us mm-hmm. up. And we didn't have any problem with it.
Okay.
They even had a sidewalk that you walked right down there, and you'd be on Maine and Michigan to get your buses and things.
Oh, so you could walk right through.
Right through.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was really, my mother was very wise in her me. She always wanted to know things, and she wasn't afraid of asking.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
she wasn't afraid of speaking her mind either.
No, she wasn't. No, she wasn't. That's true.
Well.
But I think that it was just great to see her as old as she got to be, to still be able to speak her mind, because when we went to our family reunion, it was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
She says, "You know, I like to travel." And she says, "I'd like to go to the family reunion, too." And I said, "Well, Mother," I said, "you can't go this time," because by then I had found out I had a serious heart trouble myself, and I had to put her in the nursing home in 2003. And it was hard, but it was in the neighborhood, and we was there every day.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it was hard because, you know, she was so used to going. You know, it's like we're blessed to have her for 101 years, but you still miss her.
Oh, absolutely. I miss her, and I miss your daddy.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I have a place out there at Forest Lawn, but I haven't put him out there yet. I have... He was cremated.
Right, right. And well, that's because you guys are you both decided to donate your body to the med school. And
yes.
I think that's part of the whole commitment to, to the doctors that helped to take care of you, and you made that commitment to give your bodies up.
Yeah. Well, I told my doctor, that was when I had that terrible gallbladder. I said, maybe I'll if you take my body and you have young doctors, maybe they can find out what actually went wrong or help some other people if they get into this situation. My bile duct closed up, and mm-hmm. all the bile was coming into my system.
Mm-hmm.
I was just fortunate that we found a doctor in Buffalo who could straighten me out.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you talk about not having a job, but in your later years, you did become a Sunday school teacher.
Yes, I did.
And why don't you tell us something about that, because I know that was years of your life.
That was 20 years of pure love. When the Sunday school superintendent asked me, she said, Mrs. Walker, I want you to do something for me. And I said, what would you like? She said, I'd like for you to teach the kindergarten nursery Sunday school class. I said, oh, no, I couldn't do that. And she said, oh, yes, you could do it. And then I thought about my grandson would be going into Sunday school that year. And I said, well, I guess maybe I could keep an eye on him. And that was most 20 of the most wonderful years of my life.
Yeah.
It was just to have your children come in and to have a little boy said, Miss Walker, I cried because my mother didn't bring me to Sunday school last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that I had two wonderful aides, and they could do everything.
Mm-hmm.
I had one that she could do the silhouettes.
Andrew.
We're gonna have a Mother's Day. Andrew, would you do some silhouettes so we can make them a Mother's Day card? Oh, we laid them on the floor with butcher paper and traced around them, had them soldered up, put paper in them. They had a big dollar themselves to take home.
Right.
Oh, we did marvelous things. I had my mother come downstairs and say, what are you doing? I said, I'm kind of running late, but I'm getting my Sunday school crafts together. She said, can I help you? We were just a helping family.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was nice about growing up here. Not only did you grow up with everybody, you know, here, and we had all the cousins, and we'd have, you know, the picnics at the houses, and that whole era of an extended family was so important to our experience.
It was marvelous. And then to see that some of the kids I had in Sunday school were still in church, mm-hmm. raising their kids.
Right.
It was the most marvelous thing.
Right.
It was.
Yeah, our church family was an extended family as well. That's nice. What is it that you're most proud of?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm most proud of my children.
Hmm.
They're the love of my life. There's no way I would do anything different. Living in the inner city, you're worried about your kids, but mine just turned out okay.
Well, you're going to beat us if we didn't.
That's right. That's right. It was an old school. We believed in kind of put a little on you if you couldn't do what we told you to. I mean, you could just look at my mother, look at me, and I know not to say what I was going to say.
Right.
And I just got it from her.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And how would you like to be remembered, Mommy?
Well, I would like to be remembered as a person who was kind, enjoyed people, enjoyed talking.
Yes.
And could help anybody that I could help, I'm willing to do it.
I want to throw in peacemaker, too, because I always see you as a peacemaker among your cousins. And mm-hmm. You're definitely the peacemaker in the family. As you know, I've been doing our family history, and I've gone back over 200 years now to tracing our enslaved ancestors out of South Carolina. And it's become, you know, a real strong passion of mine. And, you know, one of the things that bothers me most is that because they were enslaved, we don't have anything, any memories really of their lives. You know, so much, Grandma was so little when her parents died, you know, and she didn't have her grandparents when she was growing up. And all you have is these, you know, census papers and stuff, and I don't want that to be left for our next generation. You know, there's, if you think, you know, right now you have David and Gabriel and Christian, your great-grandsons, and in 50 years, they're probably going to have 50 or 60 years, they're going to have their own grandchildren. So we're not going to be here to give them a message, but what would you like them to know?
Well, one of the most important things I would like for them to know is how much I love them and how much I enjoy them and how much I want to see them do well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just it. I want them to try to do like they've seen us do. Their grandmother, she's a wonderful teacher. And their aunt is a wonderful teacher. And we try to instill in them that it's very important to get a good education, to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what mainly I like for them to be kind.
Okay. Is there any message that you want to pass on to their grandchildren that, you know, that anything important that you think it would be?
Well, I'd like to tell them that they grew up in a family that loved them.
Mm-hmm.
We instill love in them.
Mm-hmm.
We enjoyed to have them around us, and it was a blessing that your father was able to spend some time with his first great-grand,
mm-hmm.
and how his first grand remembers him.
Yeah.
And he often, I said to him, I said, well, your grandfather was having a birthday today if he was living. Oh, I bet they're having the biggest birthday party up in heaven.
Yeah, that was funny.
He's 8 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
And he knows that we love him.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it's wild to me that he has such clear memories of Daddy, even though he was so little when Daddy died.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm grateful for that time, too, because it helped me to see a different side of Daddy that was very, very loving.
Mm-hmm.
And it was important for me to see the person he always wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that with his relationship with little David. I think one of the things I would say to them is that it's important to remember our history and to know that we come from people who struggled, you know, in slavery. And after slavery, they had this desire to continue to better themselves. And one of the things I tell my kids at school is that, you know, we can't change what happened in the past, for example. But if you choose not to get an education, that you're enslaving yourself. And we can't afford to let that happen with, you know, our kids and our family or the kids that I teach. And I want that to be a message that we, you know, remember the past and go on to honor the legacy of our ancestors. And keep going. One of the things I want to tell you is that I'm really thankful that you're my mom, and you've made me very happy and given me lots of opportunities, and I appreciate all the sacrifices that you and Daddy did. It's been a good life. Thank you.
I thank you. I like to tell you that to remember that I told you, okay, you've been going to Africa enough now. Daddy and I are getting old. You better get a job so you can start saving for a pension.
Yep. And, you know, hopefully we'll just keep going on with everything that's been happening. But thank you for a great life, Mom.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sonia Walker. I'm 47 years old. Today is July 26, 2008. We're in Buffalo, New York, and I'm going to be talking with my mother. I'm her youngest daughter.
Good afternoon. My name is Georgie Walker. My age is 84, and today's date is July the 26, 2008, and we're in Buffalo, New York, and I'm going to speak with my daughter, Sonia.
Well, Mommy, you know that I've been really interested in family history a lot. And so one of the things I wanted you to tell me about was when you and Grandma first came to Buffalo Like, when did this happen and who you stayed with and what was it like growing up?
I came to Buffalo with my mother, and I was 4 months old. And I stayed with my Aunt Sylvia and a group of other people who had come in from Calhoun Falls, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And did you have any brothers or sisters?
No, I was an only child.
Mm-hmm. So what was it like growing up with your cousins then?
Oh, I had a great time. I always liked to be over to their house because my aunt had 7 children,
mm-hmm.
and we had fun. Everything was fun over there. It was marvelous being around them.
Mm-hmm. So did you get to spend the weekends with them, or how did you? What was
occasionally,
it like?
I would spend the night with them, mm-hmm. or spend a few days with them, and we all got along great together.
Mm-hmm. What kind of games did you play when you were growing up?
Well, I guess we played hopscotch and jacks, and we played hide and go seek. We played jump rope,
mm-hmm.
and we just had a good time.
All right. Now, did you all go to the same church at that time?
Yes, we did.
And what church were you going to then when you were?
We went to a Baptist church.
Mm-hmm.
It was called St. John's Baptist Church,
mm-hmm.
and it was in Buffalo.
Okay. And how about school? What school were you going to?
Well, eventually when I started school, I was going to school 75, and it was on Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't far. We could walk to school.
Mm-hmm. Now, all of your schools, you were always in a neighborhood school? You always walked to your schools?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then when did you, what high school did you go to?
I went to Hutchinson Central High School.
Mm-hmm.
It was downtown on Chippewa,
mm-hmm.
and Elmwood. And we walked to school there, but sometimes we would take the bus if it was real snowy.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were taking when you were at school, did you graduate from high school?
No, I didn't graduate from high school.
Mm-hmm.
When I got out of high school, I got a summer job. It was like babysitting and doing a little light housework.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the position, and they loved me, and I was just like one of the family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, days when I could come home, I would stay and go with them where they were going.
Mm-hmm.
They were wonderful people.
Now, tell me about the family that you were working for.
I was... the man that I worked for, he was, what did I tell you?
Greek, was he?
He was Greek,
mm-hmm.
and his wife was Polish, and they had 2 restaurants down on Main Street, and it was great. Every day about 3 o'clock, he'd come home with a lot of donuts and things for us to sit down and eat, and we played a lot of cards.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a marvelous experience.
Mm-hmm. And they knew, and they knew you were African American. I mean, you're light skinned, and so I think sometimes people aren't able to tell that we're African American, but they did know you were African American.
Oh, yes.
And had
they knew I was an African American, and they had 3 children. They had 2 girls and 1 boy,
mm-hmm.
and I used to curl. One of the little girls had curly type hair like
mm-hmm.
mine,
mm-hmm.
and I used to take a glass of water, stick it in, and make her some Shirley Temple curls.
Mm-hmm.
She looked beautiful. The other one had straight hair. But they were great people. I mean, they had a Greek Easter, and my relatives came out to see me because I didn't go home.
Mm-hmm.
And they set up the place just like they were company. We had a wonderful Greek meal. They were just great people.
Sometimes I think when you've talked about growing up, it seemed like the neighborhoods you lived in were less segregated than we see now in Buffalo. Buffalo is one of the most segregated cities in the country, but it seemed like your neighborhoods weren't really set up that way.
Well, on my street, there were mostly African Americans,
mm-hmm.
but in our schools, it was... neighborhood schools, so everybody, all kinds of people, Jewish, Chinese, Italian, Spanish,
mm-hmm.
everybody came to the school.
So you had a pretty integrated experience, even though it was the 30s, for example.
Yes.
Which is probably very different than if you had grown up in South Carolina. Now, when did you meet Daddy? That's one of the...
I met your father. I was about 12 years old. And one of my cousins, my mother had a few of the relatives that lived with us. And one of my cousins went to school with him. And he came to visit this cousin. Mm-hmm. He's 6 years older than I was. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I was just a child as far as he was concerned, you know. But that's when I first met him.
And when did you start courting, as you would say?
Well, I think I must have been about 17. Mm-hmm. And we started kind of talking to one another and kind of going out a little while. Mm-hmm. And I know one time we went to Woodland Beach. My mother was, and I went in the water. They didn't. My mother was sitting there, and he was sitting there. But we had a nice relationship.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were basically a war bride, sort of, because Daddy went into World War II in 1942. And then you married in 43.
Yes.
And actually, I guess that would be your second trip down south then, because you had gone down south when you were 12 for the first time.
Yes.
So when you and Daddy married, tell me about where you lived and what was that experience like going from an integrated north to a segregated south?
Well, I went down South Carolina. He was stationed in South Carolina, Fort Benning.
Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Fort Benning, Georgia. And when we got there, it was on our honeymoon. Mm-hmm. And when we got there, we had to find some housing for me because he didn't expect to be bringing me home, bringing mm-hmm. me down there. So we finally, we got quarters on the camp. Mm-hmm. And, but we stayed one night with a lady until it was arranged that I could go to the camp. And it was pretty nice. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. But it was segregated down there.
Mm-hmm. Now, so you came back up after that, after your honeymoon, back to Buffalo?
Yes, I did.
Okay, mm-hmm. And how long did you stay up in Buffalo before you went back down there?
Oh, I can't just exactly remember, but I did go down in a few months. I went back down there.
Mm-hmm. Now, when did you first meet Grandma Walker? Was that on the first trip?
It was on the first trip. Okay. I met my mother-in-law, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what was she like? Or I should say, well, was she already crazy?
No, she wasn't crazy.
Well, she was old. Did she have dementia at that
she
point?
Had, yes, she mm-hmm. had dementia. Mm-hmm. And because, see, she was, my husband was a late, all of her children were just about grown when she had Samuel.
Right. She was 47 when she had Daddy.
Yes.
And so she was already in her late 60s when you married, probably.
I guess so. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And, but she was nice, and she was a little small lady, mm-hmm. and very talkative, and she liked me.
Okay. Well, that was good. So then when you came back to Buffalo, you and Daddy and Grandma, my grandma, who your mother, who I, the only grandma I ever had, you bought a house in Buffalo. In 1946. By then, my sister and brother, Sandra and Man, were born. And you moved into one house. And what was that like, having, you know, everybody in one house? And what was that experience like for you all?
Well, it was pretty tight because we kind of shared one bedroom with my husband and the two children.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Grandma was in another bedroom?
She was in another bedroom, and uh-huh. she had another bedroom that was occupied. She had a roomer.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to get the people that lived downstairs and rented from us to move because I was very eager to get into my own place.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that you were all upstairs at one time.
Yes.
That's amazing. Oh, mm-hmm. man. That would have been crowded. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. So I know that in your life you've had some serious bouts of illness, and
yes.
One of them was in the 50s, and you had tuberculosis. And yeah. What was that experience like? Because Sandy and Mam were little. Can you tell me something about that?
When I had to go to Perrysburg, it was a sanatorium mm-hmm. in Perrysburg, New York,
mm-hmm.
and I had to get a babysitter to move into my house to take care of the two children. They were going to school,
mm-hmm.
and my mother helped out. She did the laundry for her grandchildren, and she took care of, like, watering the plants and things, because your daddy worked on the railroad, and he wasn't home all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, we made out.
Yeah. You were
and about. I had a very nice lady and her husband who took care of the children and sent them to a Lutheran church for Sunday school.
Which I always joke about how we got to be Lutheran, because, you know, most those normal black people are either Baptist or Methodist, and all of a sudden we were Lutheran.
Well, we were Lutheran, and also when I was in Perrysburg, if you were Catholic, they had a Catholic priest, but if you were Protestant, your services were conducted by a Lutheran. Mm-hmm. So I was very, I really got very close to Lutheranism.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't any problem for me to, when I came home, to join my children and join eventually the Lutheran Church.
Right. And then, of course, I always say I'm the accident. I'm the late child, because Man was 15 and Sandy turned 17, and then the month after I was born. And, of course, what I remember was, you know, your second major illness when you had the gallbladder surgery. And that was really hard, because it was like from the time I was about 10 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think you were going to live. And, of course, you know, Grandma never told me anything, and Daddy never told me anything, and everybody was keeping secrets, and that was really hard. I mean, I think that's probably why I got interested in the hospital, because I figured if I could convince them I was old enough and mature enough, they would let me go in and see you, and mm-hmm. I know that was tough.
Well, it was tough, because your grandmother had you meet her at the hospital every single day.
Mm-hmm.
She got off from work. She showed you how to get on the bus and come to the hospital and wait for her. And it was a very trying situation. I had three exploratory surgeries. I had two.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I thought I wasn't going to make it either.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't understand how you're teacher taught anything to you, because oh, I would get such wonderful get well notes and pictures from your class, and then it brightened up my days.
Mm-hmm.
And you weren't an accident, I'm telling you. I think now you're a miracle child. You have no idea how much I often think of that. Now with Grandma gone and you living upstairs and watching out for me and taking care of me. If I'm not there and it's dark, cell phone, Mother, where are you? I'm getting ready to get in the car right now. I'll be home in a little while. But I said, we do things, I guess God plans our lives for us.
Mm-hmm.
It was very difficult when your father passed in 2001, and to think that my mother lived until 2006, and she was 101.
I know. Wouldn't it be great if she could have been here for this? She could tell you some stories.
She could tell you some stories, yes. So I always felt I was very lucky.
Mm-hmm.
I really was. Things were pretty quiet around our neighborhood. And I finally became interested in Well, when I was 18, my mother took me to vote.
Well, before that, though, I mean, one of the things that, that you know, with me doing the family history research and I got Grandma's pictures, I found that editorial that you had written in 1943, and it was an editorial that was clearly saying that the Negro should be, you know, be able to work in the war effort, and it's important to open up these jobs. And I was like, wow, this is where I get my radical side from. My mother, the radical in 43, like this. And so what, when Daddy was, you know, down there, what were you doing during the war? What was Grandma doing during the war?
Well, eventually, your grandmother did get a job in the war plant.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, you could only get a job sweeping. So she had a part-time job. She would sweep. And when the wing of the plane came by, she would put some, it was very cold water that you had to take the decal out and put the decal onto the wing of the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And so I eventually got a job in one of the war plants, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the money was great. And that's what I'm saying. All these people were getting all this money. And the African-American people weren't getting a chance to go to those jobs.
Right.
But they finally did start hiring them. So
I think that you always set really incredible examples for all of us with the expectation that we would, you know, be faithful to, you know, our beliefs and be interactive with our community and make sure we got good educations. I mean, I think Daddy would have killed us if we didn't get college degrees because you and him didn't have that opportunity. I want you to share some of the things you did about our neighborhood. I mean, we've been in that same house now, you know, you for 61 years, and being the first African-American in the block and the changes we saw on the, you know, the fires in 68. And my personal opinion is that one of the reasons why that happened was that the neighborhood was going downhill so fast and the city was not responding and getting the old houses torn down. And the only way to make that happen was to get them burned down. And but then after that, tell us about the work you were doing.
Well, I was invited to a meeting. It was called the Buffalo Community Development Corporation. And they were talking about doing work to improve our neighborhood and getting people to help us get these terrible houses down. And eventually, there were so many houses on the street, we didn't have driveways at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to join this group of people, and it was marvelous. They had good ideas, and they finally got people to listen to us, and they finally had architects to work with us and help us get our neighborhood together.
And it's great because it's like almost all owner-occupied. We're in the heart of the east side of Buffalo, and people look out for each other on the street. And it's made a huge difference. We just have a few more houses. We have to get them down, and then we'll be in great shape.
Right, because we have a great big lot down there that a few more houses can be. But the best part is having garages.
Mm-hmm.
We were fortunate because when the lady next door had to move out, and we were able to go down to an interim sale and buy that piece of property and have enough land there to put two cars off the street.
Right.
And to have a big yard where my mother planted lots of flowers and my husband did a lot of gardening.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very just relaxing to be out there.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think one of the things I was proud of was that we never left the city. We could have moved to any suburb like other people could have because, you know, Daddy worked hard and saved money. But it was like a commitment to making sure that our neighborhood survived and grew and flourished. And I was proud of the fact that you did that. And I think that tied into my commitment, you know, of going to Africa and the Peace Corps and then also coming back and, you know, deciding finally become a teacher and stuff.
And teaching in the inner city.
Well, yeah, I had to give back. I mean, this
mm-hmm.
is my, these are my kids. They're my future.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel about it. Now, when you think about, you know, having raised us, if you look at, you know, what you did with us, is there anything that you would have done differently in raising us, Sandy Mannery?
No, there's no difference. I'll tell you, your father always said that I had to stay home because he was on the railroad, and if anything happened and I was on a job somewhere, who was there to take care of the children?
Mm-hmm.
And so he always insisted that I stay home. I think I did get a job when Sandra was 13.
Mm-hmm. For a hot second.
Yes. You want some independence. And then the money, you know, it was kind of difficult to, for one paycheck to take care of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So I did get a job, and I enjoyed the job. I guess I was a little independent.
Mm-hmm.
And But working with the BCDO and with the Triad Board, we really went to town once we got that first house up.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember my mother asking Mayor Griffin, he says, "Mayor, I heard you have money to renovate the bus garage over there across from my house."
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Yeah." He said, "Well, I want to know when you're going to get started." And so he told an aide next to him, he said, "I want you to take your name and address and telephone number. I'll get back to you." And a few days later, he called me. His architect told me exactly what they planned, because there was a Metro bus garage across the street. Mm-hmm. When we moved in, it was a streetcar.
Mm-hmm.
The streetcar would come in the middle of the street at about 5:30, turn into the garage, and in the morning they would go out, Maine and Michigan, not waking us up. And it wasn't, we didn't have any problem with it.
Okay.
They even had a sidewalk that you walked right down there and you'd be on Maine and Michigan to get your buses and things.
Oh, so you could walk right through.
Right through.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that was really, my mother was very wise in her me. She always wanted to know things, and she wasn't afraid of asking.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
she wasn't afraid of speaking her mind either.
No, she wasn't. No, she wasn't. That's true.
Yep.
But I think that it was just great to see her, as old as she got to be, to still be able to speak her mind. Because when we went to our family reunion, it was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
She says, "You know, I like to travel." And she says, "I'd like to go to the family reunion, too." And I said, "Well, Mother," I said, "you can't go this time," because by then I had found out I had a serious heart trouble myself, and I had to put her in the nursing home in 2003. And it was hard, but it was in the neighborhood, and we was there every day.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was hard because, you know, she was so used to going. You know, it's like we're blessed to have her for 101 years, but you still miss her.
Oh, absolutely. I miss her, and I miss your daddy.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I have a place out there at Forest Lawn, but I haven't put him out there yet. I have. He was cremated.
Right, right. And well, that's because you guys you both decided to donate your body to the med school. And
yes.
I think that's part of the, you know, the whole, you know, commitment to, you know, to the doctors that, you know, helped to take care of you, and you made that commitment to give your bodies up.
Yeah, well, I told my doctor, that was when I had that terrible gallbladder, I said, "Maybe I'll if you take my body and you have young doctors, maybe they can find out what actually went wrong, or help some other people if they get into this situation." My bile duct closed up, and mm-hmm. all the bile was coming into my system.
Mm-hmm.
I was just fortunate that we found a doctor in Buffalo who could straighten me out.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you talk about not having a job, but in your in your later years, you did become a Sunday school teacher.
Yes, I did.
And why don't you tell us something about that? Because I know that was a that 20 years of your life.
That was 20 years of pure love. When the Sunday school superintendent asked me, she said, "Mrs. Walker, I want you to do something for me." And I said, "What would you like?" She said, "I'd like for you to teach the kindergarten nursery Sunday school class." I said, "Oh, no, I couldn't do that." And she said, "Oh, yes, you could do it." And then I thought about my grandson would be going into Sunday school that year. And I said, "Well, I guess maybe I could. I can keep an eye on him." And that was most 20 of the most wonderful years of my life.
Yeah.
It was just to have your children come in and to have a little boy said, "Miss Walker, I cried because my mother didn't bring me to Sunday school last week."
Mm-hmm.
And I found that I had two wonderful aides, and they could do everything.
Mm-hmm.
I had one that she could do the silhouettes.
Andrea.
We're
going
mm-hmm. to have Mother's Day. Andrea, would you do some silhouettes so we can make them a Mother's Day card? Oh, we laid them on the floor with butcher paper and traced around them, had them sewed it up, put paper in them. They had a big doll of themselves to take home.
Right.
Oh, we did marvelous things. I had my mother come downstairs and say, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm kind of running late, but I'm getting my Sunday school crafts together." She said, "Can I help you?" We were just a helping family.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was nice about growing up here. Not only did you grow up with everybody, you know, here, and we had all the cousins, and we'd have, you know, the picnics at the houses, and that whole era of an extended family was so important to our
it
experience.
It was marvelous. And then to see that some of the kids I had in Sunday school were still in church, mm-hmm. raising their kids.
Right.
It was the most marvelous thing.
Right.
It was.
Yeah, our church family was an extended family as well. That's nice. What is it that you're most proud of?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm most proud of my children.
Hmm.
They're the love of my life. There's no way I would do anything different. Living in the inner city, you're worried about your kids, but mine just turned out okay.
Well, you're going to beat us if we didn't.
That's right. That's right. It was an old school. We believed in kind of putting a little on you if you couldn't do what we told you to. I mean, you could just look at my mother, look at me, and I know not to say what I was going to say.
Right.
And I just got it from her.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And how would you like to be remembered, Mommy?
Well, I would like to be remembered as a person who was kind, enjoyed people, enjoyed talking.
Yes.
And could help anybody that I could help. I'm willing to do it.
I want to throw in peacemaker, too, because I always see you as the peacemaker among your cousins. And mm-hmm. You're definitely the peacemaker in the family. As you know, I've been doing our family history, and I've gone back over 200 years now to tracing our enslaved ancestors out of South Carolina, and it's become, you know, a real strong passion of mine. And, you know, one of the things that bothers me most is that because they were enslaved, we don't have anything, any memories really of their lives. You know, so much, Grandma was so little when her parents died, you know, and she didn't have her grandparents when she was growing up. And all you have is these, you know, census papers and stuff, and I don't want that to be left for our next generation. You know, there's, if you think, you know, right now you have David and Gabriel and Christian, your great-grandsons, and in 50 years, they're probably going to have 50 or 60 years, they're going to have their own grandchildren. So we're not going to be here to give them a message, but what would you like them to know?
Well, one of the most important things I would like for them to know is how much I love them and how much I enjoy them and how much I want to see them do well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just it. I want them to try to do like they've seen us do. Their grandmother, she's a wonderful teacher. Their aunt is a wonderful teacher. And we try to instill in them that it's very important to get a good education, to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what but mainly I like for them to be kind.
Okay. Is there any message that you want to pass on to their grandchildren that, you know, that anything important that you think it would be?
Well, I'd like to tell them that they grew up in a family that loved them.
Mm-hmm.
We instill love in them.
Mm-hmm.
We enjoyed to have them around us, and it was a blessing that your father was able to spend some time with his first great-grand,
mm-hmm.
and how his first grand remembers him.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I said, well, your grandfather was having a birthday today if he was living. Oh, I bet they're having the biggest birthday party up in heaven.
Yeah, that was funny.
He's 8 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
And he knows that we love him.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it's wild to me that he has such clear memories of Daddy, even though he was so little when Daddy died.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm grateful for that time, too, because it helped me to see a different side of Daddy that was very, very loving.
Mm-hmm.
And it was important for me to see the person he always wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that with his relationship with little David. I think one of the things I would say to them is that it's important to remember our history and to know that we come from people who struggled, you know, in slavery, and after slavery, they had this desire to continue to better themselves. And one of the things I tell my kids at school is that, you know, we can't change what happened in the past, for example. But if you choose not to get an education, that you're enslaving yourself. And we can't afford to let that happen with, you know, our kids and our family or the kids that I teach. And I want that to be a message that we, you know, remember the past and go on to honor the legacy of our ancestors and keep going. One of the things I want to tell you is that I'm really thankful that you're my mom, and you've made me very happy and given me lots of opportunities. And I appreciate all the sacrifices that you and Daddy did. It's been a good life. Thank you.
I thank you. I like to tell you that to remember that I told you, okay, you've been going to Africa enough now. Daddy and I are getting old. You better get a job so you can start saving for a pension.
Yep. And, you know, hopefully we'll just keep going on with everything that's been happening. But thank you for a great life, Mom.
Thank you.